Hey, welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange. I'm joined by Charlie Palillo and Josh Jordan. You can follow them on X at Palillo and at Josh Jordan 975. Gents, got a lot of news, a surprising amount of news. Nothing big, but just a lot of updates from over the weekend. And so we probably just need to get right into this. We saw an offensive outburst against the Nats, which the tone was set by one of those patented Altuve first pitch home runs. We saw Corey Jolks has hit a second dinger of the Grapefruit League, two more than Jeremy Pena for those that are keeping count. Chaz McCormick, spectacular defensive play in center. We also have Chandler Rome's projections on the opening day roster. Let's start there. It's just no real surprises there except for John Singleton. I get Singleton is out of options. And look, this comes from a guy who was rooting for him to get called up last season. But outside of one great game in the regular season and a really nice postseason appearance where he worked a walk, I don't really understand why he's taken up a roster spot other than, I guess, maybe they don't have better options. Again, before I get slaughtered, I am rooting for Singleton. Not a knock against him. Guys, on just sticking to the offensive side of the ball, the guys that are holding the bats, what stuck out to you from the past few days' updates?
Nothing dramatic. And I think for the Astros spring training, certainly in terms of the lineup, the biggest news is Joe Espada altering the construct of it. And he's kind of gone with the varsity lineup a couple of times, the top four a couple of times more than that, with Altuve 1, Yordan 2, Bregman 3, Tucker 4. No one is having such a lousy spring that you're saying, does he need to have his eyes checked? Is there a problem here? No one's going so completely bananas that there's reason to get overly carried away with, hey, is this going to be a big star? Settle down. We're still in mid-March, or barely now into mid-March. So I think for the Astros, it's pretty much on the offensive side, no news is good news. There are those edge spots on the roster. You reference John Singleton. It's a great personal story for him to get back to the major leagues at all. But I'm with you on the balance tipper being that he's out of options. What, is there going to be a big clamor to claim John Singleton if the Astros try to send him out? I mean, the Astros got him off the nothing heap when he flamed with the Brewers getting called up last year. And this is a guy in his early 30s. It's not like some team is thinking, well, 23 years old is this vast untapped power potential. If a team was to claim him, my thought would be good for John Singleton and good luck. Not that the Astros somehow blew it. But there is no clearly better alternative because of the guy that Dana Brown traded for to possibly be that alternative. Trey Cabbage has shown essentially nothing, meaning nothing good so far this spring.
Yeah, that's what I was going to hit on there. It was Trey Cabbage. A lot of power, 30 home run power. He can run. He can steal bases. There's a lot of talent to like there, but he's an older prospect in this spring. I was looking at Chandler Rome's column. He's 3-for-23 with 10 Ks. That's just not going to get it done, and they have more options with him. So it looks like, yeah, they're going to stick with Singleton. Gray Kessinger is going to be one of those utility guys, along with Dubon and Caratini. That all makes a lot of sense. You know, this is just such a loaded team. There's not a whole lot of spots where you wonder what they're going to do, especially offensively. Pitching, kind of the same. So it's, you know, that's the benefit of having a great team. There's only a couple roster spots that players can make. So we'll see how it plays out. But we know how baseball works. Over the course of the year, you're going to need a lot of different guys. It's a long, grueling season. It's nice to have options.
Without real sink your teeth into storylines, the marginalia gets inflated, right? There's space to fill in print. That's still a thing. Certainly online columns, podcasts, but some people will turn spring training molehills into mountains, at least as talking points in the moment. Other than if you have a personal vested interest in one of the guys involved, you're an Astros fan. You shouldn't be sweating for 1 second. Cabbage or Singleton? Singleton or Cabbage? Because if either plays a truly meaningful part in the fate of the 2024 Houston Astros, a whole lot would have gone wrong.
I guess what surprises me too is I touched on the open. Chaz makes a fantastic play in center. We've seen that. Chaz is a gamer when it comes to playing defense out in center, just in the outfield in general. It was hard to tell in the previous regime what was Dusty and what was Dana Brown pushing for. But Dusty's gone now. Are you surprised we're still doing the Jake Myers thing?
Only mildly for a couple of reasons. One, as an analytically bent organization, maybe a little less so, specifically with Dana Brown, then going back to Jeff Luhnow, and then if you want to include James Click in there. But all those defensive metrics on Myers, and you balance that with the eye test and the on-field results, but all the defensive metrics do dictate that Myers is the better center fielder between he and Chaz McCormick. Two, they're going to need a fourth outfielder to take at least some playing time because Yordan Alvarez is not going to be in left field every day. So, you know, if they felt McCormick was their best center fielder, well, then Myers would be getting time in left since they feel the inverse. It's Myers in center and Chaz will go to left for the most part with Dubon mixed in a little bit, perhaps, in center. And then the other variable, which isn't big picture about the Astros being cheapskatey on the roster construction, right? They're clearly going to come in, barring some sort of bizarre sell-off in season, above the first competitive balance tax threshold. But it doesn't mean going to be willy-nilly with the last spots on the roster. And Jake Myers is a still pre-arbitration salary. I have no doubt that factors into why he's still getting a little bit of favored nation status. I think if he had 3 years service time and was making $2.5 million this year, then a Pedro León would have a much better chance, or a Joey Lopefito might have a real sleeper chance of making the club out of spring training. Instead, unless we get a couple of injuries these next couple of weeks, those guys basically have no chance.
I think it's also part of its Minute Maid Park. That is a big center field. So they want somebody that can cover some ground out there that has a good enough arm to get the ball in. And I think that's why Dusty favored Dubon. He has a good throwing arm, but they're going to give Jake Myers every chance. Charlie kind of hit on it. He's inexpensive. They would like to get something out of him. It looked like before he got injured, yep, he could really be something for the Astros in center field. And the injuries have slowed him down and didn't hit very well last year. So they're going to give him a chance. I would like to see Chaz out there more. It is an odd argument to me where, oh, defense is so important, but Chaz is a better defender than Yordan, but you're going to play Yordan a lot in left field. It's not like Yordan's a poor defender, but I would feel better with Chaz out there. But I think it is part of that center field thing. It's a huge center field. They want somebody that can cover ground. That's probably the best thing Jake Myers does, is he can really run, chase down balls in the outfield.
And throw in the work with the sports psychologist. So they're hoping a door is unlocked to take Jake Myers back to pre-shoulder injury in Chicago against the White Sox. And look, we're talking about the guy who's going to bat ninth. So it's not as if they're saying, hey, Jake Myers, you have speed. Really get it together. Ratchet up that on-base percentage. You're our leadoff batter, kid. Go get him. He's going to bat ninth. Jake Myers could fall on his face and he'll still give you better offensive production than the Astros have gotten out of the ninth spot the last 3 years.
I knew you were going to go there.
As predictable as Martin Maldonado's offensive output?
My perspective is just that you have a Dubon for depth too. He's projected to make this roster as well on the bench. Dubon's a capable outfielder as well. But I'm with you. If they can get pre-shoulder injury Myers back, that guy looked like he was headed places, and it just seems like it wasn't just his shoulder that he left hanging out there. It seems like his confidence was also still out there on that Chicago wall. And if he can get that back and find it, he had a nice trajectory and looked like he was going to be another one of those unheralded players from the farm system that comes out of nowhere and becomes something kind of like Chaz McCormick. On the pitching side of things, we had some updates. JP France has added a new sinker to his arsenal. Altuve has worked with him on this pitch just from a feedback standpoint, holding the bat and watching it. And Altuve had glowing things to say about it, said this is really going to fit nice into his repertoire. Of course, Altuve is going to say that. He's a nice guy. We know last year France was 11-6 with a 3.83 ERA in 24 games, but his final eight games posted over a 5, almost a 6 ERA at 5.84. We saw Spencer Arrighetti, Forrest Whitley get set down. Who do you think makes it up back sooner, Arrighetti or Whitley?
Well, I think if the Astros don't run into any further injuries in their starting rotation, Arrighetti will get some seasoning, if not an entire season at AAA. Whereas if they have a knee in the bullpen and Whitley gets off to a halfway decent start, since the final couple of guys in the bullpen are very questionable going into the season, I might lean to Whitley in that respect. You know, on JP France, I'm curious, can he command the new pitch, which really is the question with all his repertoire? Control was a problem for JP France throughout his minor league career, extremely impressively, and for the Astros, fortuitously. His command was better when he joined the Astros than it ever had been over the course of his minor league career, but that tapered off late, whether through a professional high in innings or water finding its level, regression to his career mean, whatever it would be. So if France is going to stick as a back end of the rotation guy, he's going to need command. And if you can add one more weapon to that arsenal, good for him. And while talking about guys who you think of as back end of the rotation, but maybe bumps up to the mid given health maladies, certainly starting the season with no Verlander, Jose Urquidy. I mean, we're talking still just 9 spring training innings, but off his injury-plagued and then not very good 2023 so far, so very good for Jose Urquidy this spring.
Maybe there is something with Urquidy and getting over the tip pitches and him getting it going this year. With J.P. France, I'm kind of reminded of, you know, with Altuve sitting in there with France, it reminds me of, remember when Oswalt went away from the two-seamer and went back to his four-seam fastball, and a lot of reason for that was Lance Berkman standing in the box. And Berkman telling Oswalt, man, I feel like it's harder to get to your four-seam fastball. That pitch is more impressive to me. And Oswalt went back to the four-seamer and had a lot of success with that. In this circumstance, it's France adding the two-seamer, the sinker. But what's interesting about that pitch for JP is all his other stuff, his sliders and his cutters and curveballs, they all break away from a right-handed hitter. With this pitch, it tails in a little bit on a right-handed hitter, so guys can't automatically kind of dive out over the plate. So this could actually really benefit JP France, so I'm excited to see that. The other one I'm excited about is the changeup for Christian Javier. You don't just have to guess fastball or curveball with him. If he's getting swing and miss with that changeup, you're going to have to respect that a little more. And I talked about it in a video last year. I felt like Javier was so predictable. If it was up, it was going to be a fastball. If it was down, it was going to be an off-speed pitch. So with the changeup coming in, you know, you don't want to throw high changeups, but you can throw them for strikes, and the thigh high, lower down to the knees, they're better off when they're tailing off out of the strike zone. That's the best way to get your changeup, get some swing and miss there. But I just think it gives you one more wrinkle, one more pitch you got to think about with Javier, where you can't solely go out there and just hunt fastballs, or if you just want to go up there and try and hit the slider, you think he's going to give you just kind of a get you over breaking ball to get a quick strike. You can do that. But when you mix in the changeup, now it's not 50-50 anymore. So if he can locate that pitch and, you know, really command it, get some good movement on it, that could be huge for him this year.
Hey, just to be clear on Roy Oswalt, that's the former Savannah Banana, Roy Oswalt you're talking about?
Yeah, that's him.
That was quite the blast over the weekend. And Roger Clemens, even though he got lit up, 61 years old, a few extra pounds, but he still looked like Roger Clemens on the mound.
Yeah, and Oswalt's 12-6 curve looks like my fastball, so there is that. I knew you were going to hit on the Javier. You are the president of the Javier fan club, Josh, and with good reason, because if they can get Christian Javier right, he is one of their most devastating weapons. And it wasn't just that they could guess what was coming with him based on location. It's that, because he's always had just the same two pitches, it was also that stop throwing it down the very middle of the plate.
Yeah.
It was middle. And when Javier's at his best, it's when he can use that four-seamer at the top of the zone and he's hiding the ball well. It's really hard to square up. And he was just throwing it like BP fastball last season. And also, too, it's about his endurance. If his conditioning is better this season, that bodes well for him. Charlie, anything else that you noticed out of the arms update wise, besides Roger and Royo recapturing some magic over the weekend?
Nothing alarm bell ringing. I'll just piggyback your point on not really the secret other component or hidden other component, but component of wildness. I mean, you think of pitchers, you think, oh, he can't find a strike zone. He's walking guys. He's always falling behind 2-0, 3-1. I mean, that's all problematic, but wild can mean in the strike zone where you're leaving too many pitches, you know, inner third to a power hitter or right down the heart when you're trying to pitch at least to the outer edge of the strike zone a little bit. And that speaks to, along with a little bit of just fall off in his raw stuff last season, to why Javier was bitten a lot by that home run bug.
Yeah. And finally, just on Javier, another important update. He's working in the slide step off the mound, trying to hold guys at first base a little better. You know, he was in top 10, one of the worst pitchers at holding guys at first base last year. So they're working in that side step because he'll walk guys from time to time. We know that about Javi. You can't have him just walk a guy to lead off an inning and then it's an automatic he takes second base where you're just basically giving up doubles every time you walk somebody. So it's great. Joe Espada talked about that. He's like, we're seeing improvement. The slide step's working. He's doing a better job holding guys on. I think that'll be huge. And the other thing with Javi, just if he could ever just be able to locate a little better, like in the, like at the knee, not just every fastball has to be letter high. If he could spot some pitches on the outside corner, inside corner, he did a lot of that in the World Series against the Phillies. We don't really remember that, but there was, you know, he had some called strikes looking at the knee outside corner. If he could mix that in with this changeup and that high heat, I think that'll be effective. The other big update we haven't mentioned, Verlander throwing in the bullpen, ramping it up, getting into the lower 90s, starting to show more intensity in his throwing in the bullpen on the sides. So that's very good news for the Astros. And I don't know if we even talked about the Gerrit Cole stuff. This could be interesting, right, with the opening day.
Yeah, ceremonial first pitches only, perhaps, from Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole, as the Yankees, whose rotation is replete with more question marks than the Astros. They lose Cole, who won the Cy Young Award, led the league in innings pitched, and is great, and has been sensationally durable. But he's 33 years old now. Yankee fans have to be holding their breath really hard on that. Last year, give or take this time, I think we had unanimity that over under on Fromber, I think, was 14 and a half wins. And we thought, you know, not only was a lock to win 20, but over 14 and a half seems a good play. This is why it's called gambling, kids. Always bet with your head, not over it. If one Astro pitcher this year, let's set the number at 15 and a half, if only one of their starters is to win 16 plus, who are you taking?
We'll see about that elbow with Gerrit Cole. For his sake, hopefully it's nothing terrible. One guy that's not a question mark around, Angel Hernandez, looking in midseason form already. If you haven't seen it, ejected Lance Lynch twice from the same game. So, you know, we talk about guys having up and down seasons. Angel Hernandez, the picture of consistency every season, season after season. Well, gents, it is that time, list season, spelt S-Z-N, because there's really not a lot of news going on. So this is when all of the media outlets post their top lists of whatever, and then the rest of us talk shows and podcasts react to it. So let's react to some lists. ESPN releasing their top 100. The most players from teams were Astros and Braves with 8 each. Division rivals, Rangers and Mariners, had 5 each. The interesting thing, I think, is a list like this that combines both pitchers and position players. I think that speaks even higher when you have a guy like Yordan Alvarez that slots at 8, who's just behind Gerrit Cole. Again, we got the news of Gerrit Cole's questionable elbow. We'll see how that actually plays out. Yankees have 3 in the top 7 with Judge, Soto, and Cole. I think that kind of speaks to the Yankees lineup in general being just very top heavy. You have Altuve at 26, who's 2 behind Marcus Semien at 24. Guys, react. I'll leave it wide open.
All right, well, I'll start at 2nd. You reference Altuve, sure to cause apoplexy among many an Astros fan. What do you mean he's behind Marcus Semien? Are you kidding me? Okay, the criteria matter for this, right? It's the ESPN panel of who's going to be the best player in 2024, and I guess through their panelists, they gave him a bunch of pairs of players. Who would you take? Who would you take? And as you alluded to, Brandon, you know, how do you factor pitcher versus everyday player? Do you come back to war on this type of stuff? As we talk about, it should be if every position, when talking about players at a particular position anyway, if every player elsewhere in your lineup or on your roster was an exactly average player, who would you rather have, right? Certain positions are more premium. Altuve's best is certainly better than Marcus Semien's best, but attendance is part of the grade, right? Semien more than doubled Altuve in WAR last season because Semien played all 162 games. And the year before that, he played 161 games. And the year before that, he played 162 games. Altuve just 90 games last season. And, you know, he's only 4 months difference in age from Semien, but Marcus Semien does have the durability factor, also a gold glove accomplished second baseman and a really good player. So it's not insane, though, if you're asking me, who would I rather have in 2024, knock on wood, if Altuve is going to be healthy all the year, I'm going to go with Altuve. But there is more question with him about that than there is with Semien. So it's not absurd that Semien comes in 2 spots ahead of Altuve overall, 24-26. And I guess when ESPN surveyed its guys, you know, Mookie Betts was the number 1 second baseman, but he's now a shortstop with the Dodgers. So you need to have some flexibility on all this stuff.
What sticks out to me is the little over $100 million contract that Yordan Alvarez got, and what was it, $700 million that Otani got? And on this list, you have Yordan at 8 and Otani at 9. So Yordan in front of the richest man in the world when it comes to baseball. So I'd like to see that. And you guys mentioned it, a lot of these pitchers at the top of the list. Corey Seager coming in at number 6, I thought was interesting, but he had incredible numbers last year and he missed a lot of time, and he's coming off winning a World Series. So what are you going to say about that? Freddie Freeman at number 5. I mean, these are just some of the best hitters in baseball. I do find it interesting. You don't see an Astros starting pitcher crack the list very early. So obviously the Verlander injury stuff, the slippage from Fromber, you don't have, you know, an Astros pitcher up in the top 10 like Garrett Cole's up there, but who knows, that could change based on the MRI we talked about with Cole. I agree with Charlie. Altuve missed a lot of time last year. That's just a fact. So you can't really get around that. And then Kyle Tucker also gets up here at 28. I think that's a good spot for Tucker. And he had a really rough postseason last year. So I'm sure maybe they downgraded him a little bit for that.
I mean, one way of framing it, there are 30 big league teams. So if everybody was equal, each team would have one representative. Well, the Astros have 4 of the top 30. Then you get to Verlander at 50, Fromber at 56, the tail end guys, Josh Hader 61, so not terribly far down. Jeremy Pena making the list at 88. That's more of an investment stock to me. He certainly wasn't one of the top 100 players in Major League Baseball in 2023. Neither was Carlos Correa. He comes in at 78, 10 spots ahead of Pena. That might be one to track. Off what they did in 2023, I mean, Chaz McCormick's 29 years old this year, so it's not like he would seem to have that much more potential lift in his game, but he was definitely better than Jeremy Pena last year. Chaz McCormick did not crack the top 100, but 8 out of the top 100 is stout.
I thought it was interesting with this list because Altuve was 2 behind Semien. Fox Sports listed their top second baseman of 2024 just a few days ago. They had 1-2 Altuve Semien in their list, so I guess they're projecting,
which is fine. It's just not heresy to go the other way for the
exactly. Now, you mentioned, Charlie, about how by the eyeball test you'd say who would you rather have in these order correctly. Would you really, if you had to construct a roster, are you taking Soto first over Yordan?
That's also a durability thing, right? Yordan decrease games played, 144, I think, in 21, 135 in 22, 114 last season. Soto doesn't miss games. He played every game for the Padres. And, you know, his on-base percentage is amazing. He's absolutely going to get juiced power numbers moving from San Diego to New York. And while he's not a real good outfielder, he's going to play outfield pretty much full time, which does add value above what a designated hitter does. But Yordan is just such an offensive monster to be in the top 10 almost solely. I mean, we know here that he plays a very credible left field, especially in small Minute Maid Park. But he's going to get scored down for the games that he's missed and that he's not a full-time defender. But he's still the 8th best player in baseball via this ranking anyway. And Josh referenced relative to Otani, who was absolutely historic and the best player in baseball last year. But I don't know, a third of that value, 40% of that value is off the table because he's not going to pitch this year. And offensively, Otani is a beast, but he's not as good as, say, Ronald Acuna Jr. was, who's number 1 in baseball in these rankings, purely by the offensive numbers this year. If you could give me health, I'm taking Yordan over Otani. So, you know, there's room for intelligent debate and disagreement, and obviously it's going to be tinged by homerism on depending where you are having a discussion. I mean, Aaron Judge off that toe is a bit of a health question mark to me. He's 32 years old next month, to have him all the way at number 2. But some of the thinking there is Judge batting behind Soto. Wow, what a tandem they can be. So we can all have a little fun with it. No one should get outraged by it. Though for many, outrage is part of the fun.
I just go back to the pitching real quick. The fact that the Astros don't have a pitcher come in until the 50s, it's a good reminder that Brandon and I talked last week about a CBS sports ranking about the Astros having the second best rotation in baseball. A lot of this opinion is based on depth here. You don't have a guy that's a bona fide top 10 player that's a pitcher. Now, Verlander could turn into that. I mean, he's not that far away from winning a Cy Young Award. And Charlie asked me in the last video, like, out of all the Astros pitchers, who would you like to see win the most games, be a lock to win 16 games, something like that? For me, it's Verlander, because that opens up that top tier. Maybe he could return to be an elite pitcher. And if he ends up winning 16 games, then that means he hit the 140 innings in his option vest, and he's going to be back with you the following season. I think he's in a good spot. I would expect a big year from him. With Fromber wanting to call his own pitches, and it's not looking great. And live BP, he's kind of getting smacked around, and his spring training starts have left a little to be desired. So for me, Verlander just feels a little more steady. I know he's quite a bit older, but I think he's still got some juice left. So I'm going to be watching Verlander. I'd like to see him come away, win the most games for the Astros this year, be that bona fide ace to start in the playoffs game one, and of course, lock him up for one more season in an Astros uniform.
Not the devil's advocate, but I'll go Fromber on that argument, in that if there's any Astros starter who's going to throw 200 innings, it's Fromber, because he's been durable. Now, if Javier has the breakout and goes more deeply into games, maybe he can make a run at it, but he's more of a 160, 170 inning guy. I think Verlander at 41 with the start of his season to be on the injured list, that's going to hold down. And I think they'll be extra cautious, because the Astros should be very good. And it's not like we skip a turn in the rotation for Verlander here, or even if he needs a few extra days before or after the All-Star break, that, oh no, we're jeopardizing a playoff spot by messing around here. Unless some other things hit the skids. I think, I don't want to call it babying Verlander, but at age 41, he threw 162 innings, 165 innings last year, that would be a real reasonable target for him. And if they can be at the overall rate of effectiveness, a low to mid threes earned run average, sure, that's not 2022 adjusted Verlander, but not 1% of the pitchers in the history of the game have even approached that guy. Would augur very well. If you can tell me Verlander's making 26, 27 starts, thumbs up to that.
I think it's interesting on this list, especially towards the top, you see gigantic contracts. And you contrast that with the guys from the Astros that have made this list. And they're much more manageable contracts for Houston, starting with Yordan, who's at the top of that list, a much more manageable contract. We talked pre-show about George Springer and his legacy here in Houston. We talked about how, can you imagine in a city like, let's say, New York, let's say if George Springer had been a Yankee and it helped the Yankees win a World Series and had been a World Series MVP, and then the team lets him walk because they go, we don't want to overpay that guy. Can you imagine the difference in tone and outrage from that fan base versus where in Houston, it's almost a foregone conclusion. Half of the fan base, if not larger, has ruled out Alex Bregman coming back. I think we hold out hope for Kyle Tucker to be able to be retained. But I think this list is very emblematic of that, because you just see guys at the top of this list, including Ohtani, get gigantic contracts. But it's hard to build a team around that.
If you're not in a market where it's almost damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead, if Gerrit Cole, he's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks, and then he'd be a question mark after that, or doomsday scenario, Tommy John, ex-Yankee, on line one, do the Yankees say, oi, okay, now go sign Blake Snell, or Blake Snell and or Jordan Montgomery. I mean, the Astros are much more a have financially than a have not, but the Yankees, the Dodgers are in unique circumstances. The Mets can be. I mean, it completely failed for them last season, but that you can still play checkbook baseball at any point to address any need. And if it takes you in another realm of competitive balance tax, oh well. It speaks to the Astros' organizational ability to sustain the way they have over these last 7 years, while losing premium talent basically on an annual basis.
I think that's why we're seeing a lot of trade conversations for guys like Dylan Cease, and we're hearing rumors about the Yankees kicking the tires on him, and they don't want to pay Blake Snell what he's asking for. And then you're seeing rumors about how they don't like that he's a gamer. Like, you start hearing all these weird kind of things about maybe why they chose not to go that way. And Jordan Montgomery, of course, great pitcher, helped win a World Series last year. He's still looking for that right deal. But it just shows you, teams, if they can, they'll try and work a trade and get somebody a little more affordable. But sometimes they are just going to break the bank. And it will be interesting to see if Gerrit Cole is going to miss any significant time. It's a good question, Charlie. Will they just go scratch a check to Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery, one of these guys? At some point, that's going to catch up with you, even if you're the Yankees. I mean, their payroll is really ballooned this offseason. So I'm interested to see how that goes, but I like the way the Astros do it. It's been working. They're making the right moves. Jim Crane, sure, I'd love to see Alex Bregman back, but they seem to know what they're doing. And it's kind of like the Texans have gotten now, where I'm like, okay, I kind of trust what you guys are doing now. So if I may not agree with the decision you make, I trust you that you know what you're doing. The Astros, they've been like this for years. They know how this works. They've been through these negotiations before. So I think you just have to trust Jim Crane and Dana Brown that they're going to try and compete every year, and they're not going to sign one contract that could keep them from competing every year.
Yeah, the Yankees offered Blake Snell, by all reports anyway, 6 years, $162 million a month or two ago. So, you know, Scott Boras is just foaming at the mouth if it turns out to be bad news for Gerrit Cole. And one very specific Astros-Yankees comp, but Aaron Judge is 5 years plus older than Yordan Alvarez. Who would you rather have under contract at his current terms? Aaron Judge, 8 more years at $40 million per season, taking him through his age 39 season, or Yordan at the next 5 seasons, which should presumably eat up the heart of his prime, may still have more after it, but 5 years at under $20 million per season. At the end of this contract, Yordan will still be only 31 years of age.
No-brainer right there.
And we can debate these lists from the media outlets, but the list that really matters is 2 rings, 4 pennants. And the fact that the player that's rated the top of this list for the Astros is getting paid a fraction of what some of these other guys are getting paid, that's Jim Crane ball. It's results and smart contracts. And to your point, Charlie, it's sustainability. That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Strohs. We appreciate you listening. We'll be back in the middle of the week, I think maybe Wednesday or Thursday, with a little bonus episode action. So make sure you're looking out for that. Until next time, we appreciate you joining us. Go Strohs.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.